Blog Talk Radio.
Miss Tammy's TKO Radio Show.
The views and comments expressed do not reflect the opinions of eWater Radio. All comments and views are show guest views and comments and in no way reflect views or comments of eWater Radio, KEWR, DB, or its affiliates.
Mystique Entertainment, a global network for your top source for live streaming continuous content, such as music, film, trade shows, lifestyles, and wellness, and reality shows. For business inquiries, contact Mystique Entertainment. Info mystiqueentertainment@gmail.com.
What's up, everyone? You are listening to Miss Tammy's TKO Radio Show on eWater Radio, KEWR-DB, where I will feature the hottest topics in regards to nutrition, sports, and fitness. Now, before I interview, I have to give a couple of shout-outs, as always. Everybody that listens to me knows my format. First off, I got to give a shout-out to my daughter, Brianna, Elena, and the twins, Soli and Ava, for turning a big 7. And for Berkeley turning 5, happy birthday, princesses. And my nephew, Zachary. And last but not least, my 3 uncles, Uncle Howie, Uncle Johnny, and Uncle Tom. May you all rest in peace. I miss you, uncles, very much. And last but not least, I got to give a shout-out to Antonio Mandingo McKee for his amazing interview last week. I really appreciate you sharing your compelling story. You are truly an inspiration and a champion in taking a situation and creating your own destiny in a positive direction when you had all odds against you. My hat goes off to you for your perseverance, and for making a difference daily in the lives of the children, in your children, and in the gym. Congratulations on all your success, my friend. Keep up the amazing work. Now, I'm really excited about tonight's interview, some of which I met at a screening of the Netflix movie, The Game Changers. He is an interventional cardiologist. Since 2008, he has served as a chief of cardiology at the Kaiser Permanente Riverside and Moreno Valley Medical Centers. Currently, he serves on the American Heart Association Inland Empire Chapter Board as president. Over the years, he's been recognized for multiple awards, and he's a leader of many projects that we're going to discuss tonight in the interview. Let me introduce to you Dr. Columbus Batiste. Let's see if he's on the line. Let's see. Dr. Batiste, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Hey, I'm good. How are you? I can hear you.
I'm well. All right.
Good.
Good to hear you. Good to speak with you.
Great to see you, or great to speak with you as well. I thank you so much for taking the time to be on my show tonight. I know you're super, super busy, but I really appreciate you making the time to be on my show tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I love talking about this stuff. It's my passion.
Good, good. You know, so we met at the movie, you know, The Game Changers a while back. Can you tell our listeners out there that maybe haven't seen the Netflix movie, The Game Changers, what that movie is all about and your involvement with that project?
Absolutely. I mean, to be honest, I don't know if there's anyone who hasn't seen The Game Changers as of yet, because it's kind of really blown up. But for those who may not have seen it, it's a phenomenal film, and it's really kind of looking at the life of an athlete and looking at his journey really to discovering how to improve not only his health, but his athletic performance. And so it kind of chronicles his transition, recovering from injury, and his beginnings of researching to look and see what's the best way that he can perform optimally to give him that edge. You know, everyone's always looking for that edge. I mean, for athletes, you're looking for it inside the ring or the court or the field. you know, in academics, you're looking for that edge to get you a little bit better grade, to get you into the best fellowship or internship or whatever it may be. And so he's going through this whole journey and process, and what he finds is he finds that the answer is actually glaring in front of him in the form of a whole food plant-based diet. And not only does it seem to give him that edge, he uncovers or rather discovers other athletes who have adopted the same sort of lifestyle and have excelled in their areas of expertise. And so in the process of all this, he goes through the tragedy of having his dad suffer a heart attack. And in this process, he realizes that this same food plan, because not diet, because diet is a horrible term. You know, you die from it. You don't want to do diet, but living it and this lifestyle, what he realizes is that this same thing that's giving him an athletic edge is also the same cure to help his father recover from a heart attack. And so he begins to kind of uncover, and then that's where you have health professionals like myself who chime in, although I like to think of myself as an athlete. Maybe he sought me out because of my athletic prowess. I don't know, but it probably had more to do with with a little bit of luck as well as the role with in medicine. So he takes us through that whole journey, and it's a phenomenally well-done film. And it gets you inspired. It gets you ready to get out there and run track, lift weights, get in that octagon, do all those things like that, as well as to eat healthily. And so it's a phenomenal film.
I totally agree. I was blown away by it. I had a lot of friends tell me about it prior to me watching it at the screening, and everybody kept saying, "You got to see this movie. You got to see this movie." And then I knew I was going to go to the screening, so I was like, no, I want to see it on the big screen. So I waited to see it. I held out, and I waited to see it. And I was so amazed by the performance level of these athletes and the way that they were able to sustain their energy and shape, their physique by eating only plants. I mean, how do you know how much you should eat and still sustain your energy and be able to perform at that elite level?
No, well, I mean, that part is fairly simple. I mean, you know, athletes are going to perform and they're going to have complex carbohydrates that's going to give them energy. I mean, our brains work off of carbohydrates. And so we oftentimes attribute carbs as being bad, and it's not complex carbs. It's the simple carbs. And I always kind of describe it as the pre-chewed food, the food that melts in your mouth, not in your hands. And we all know those certain kind of rolls or buns that can kind of dissolve without even chewing. Those are not the ideal ones, but the food substances that make you chew are beneficial for your body. And so when you get the appropriate amount of caloric intake, right, so the more athletically inclined you are, the more you're participating in hard sports, you're lifting weights, you will have to be very aware. And most athletes are very aware of their caloric content. They have it down to macronutrients and so forth and breaking down the fats and proteins as well as the carbs. But they oftentimes don't think about the micronutrients. And those micronutrients are contained in plant-rich foods and really provide that recovery and decrease your inflammation. And that's really one of the keys in the secret sauce.
Absolutely. You know, I consult boxers and pro athletes, you know, with sports nutrition on the side. And I know some athletes that are vegan, vegetarian, and plant-based actually as well. And I find it a lot easier actually for athletes to cut weight being vegan, vegetarian, or plant-based, to be honest with you. But, you know, there are some challenges as well in consulting those athletes because some of them come to me and say, well, I don't have enough protein or calcium or iron in their diet. And so we have to incorporate some, you know, some different foods. What are some of the best foods? Can you share some of the best foods that you know that would help sustain, you know, protein, calcium, and iron in their, you know, in their diets, in your opinion?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. And so one of the things in terms of protein, your legumes are going to be a very high source of protein. When you look at your lentils and you look at your beans and your peas, and those are going to be very rich and strong in protein. When mixed with your whole grains, your brown rice, as well as the quinoa too as well, you now have this quote-unquote complete protein, which if you have a variety, you're going to get all those components to get the complete protein. But now you're enriched and you have the full amounts. And so it's fairly easy to get the protein you need in doing that division of whether it's 0.8 per kilogram and so forth in terms of protein content, looking at the amount that you need. So So from a protein standpoint, that's usually my first go-to is your legumes, is your beans, your peas, maybe even some of the nuts too as well are going to be a great way. Adding those to smoothies too as well. So great simple way as you add in your vegetables and your plant-rich milk. Now you add in your tofu or even white beans that won't be, they'll be flavorless. And it gives you added protein if you're one who's in the weights and doing things like that. Another source when we look at iron, and iron is so key, it's so important. Iron is for your red blood cell count, the transportation of the oxygen to kind of help your body perform and your heart perform ideally. That becomes important as well. And so when we look at the iron, we have to make sure that we get adequate amounts of iron too as well. And that's going to be a large component is going to be inside of your green leafy vegetables too as well. For your iron, your spinach mm-hmm. is high. Your tomatoes can have it, sun-dried tomatoes. Your seeds can have it. Swiss chard can have it up to like 4 milligrams per cup, 2.4 to 3 or 4 milligrams, if I recall correctly, for some of your beans too as well in that 3 to 4 range. So once again, the same foods that are giving you the benefit of the protein can also give you the benefit of the iron. So my recollection serves me right, the beans will give you somewhere around the 3 to 4 range in terms of milligrams per half cup to cup, and your spinach gives you even more too as well. And same for calcium. So calcium is going to be those dark green leafy vegetables, and it's also going to, so it's going to be your Swiss chard, it's going to be your collards, your kale, your broccoli, your seeds too as well. Many of the nut-based milks will be fortified. So you can get adequate amounts of calcium to build the bones without it leaching from the bones in terms of being acidic and it being alkaline. And so there's huge benefits by having these plant-rich foods.
I totally agree. You know, as you look into it, you know, with calcium, they actually say that greens have the same amount of calcium as dairy milk.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. I think we need to change the commercials and have like little strips of spinach on making mustaches out of spinach and kale as opposed to milk.
That's true, right? Because so many people don't know that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, okay, so what about a bodybuilder? You know, somebody that's trying to put on weight. I mean, in our heads, we could, you know, most people would think that plant-based diet, like how are you going to be able to have lean mass, you know? So for your average person and for your athlete that's like a bodybuilder, like the gentleman that we saw in the Game Changers, how are you able to put mm-hmm. on mass by eating plant-based?
Well, you know, it all boils down to calorie density of foods. And so we know that when we look at, which is essentially a relationship of your calories per pound, and some of the most calorie-dense mm-hmm. foods are going to be your oils and your butters and fats and so forth. Your nuts and your seeds are going to be high in calorie-dense. Your meats are going to be calorie-dense. So once again, it gets into a standpoint of calorie content. No, you're not going to put on weight by only eating salads. And that's oftentimes what people think. Oh, let me just have salad. I'm going plant-based or vegan. I just have to eat salads and green vegetables. Now that's beneficial for your body, but it absolutely will not cause you to, you won't put on weight. You'll lose weight. And so you have to make sure that calorie deficit, your calorie count is high. And so you have to be very aware of like your whole grains, your pastas, you're going to have your nuts and seeds for that purpose. If that's where your avenue is of going is to put on weight. If we're speaking in terms of heart health, it may be slightly different in terms of my prescription and my recommendations for an individual. But your breads, your pastas, those things will allow you to kind of put on. And so you look at Nehemiah Delgado, who you mentioned from the Game Changers, who eats all of these mm-hmm. things and is in the gym all the time, and he's just shredded and ripped up. And he's bulk and he's carb loading, and he's not, and folks are always looking at him in amazement.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely that was a definite game changer for me to see him. I think one of my favorite parts of the movie was when they posed the question, you know, have you ever seen a gorilla eat meat? I had to ponder to myself, wait a minute, actually, no. You know, and a gorilla has a huge amount of mass and strength and only eats from plants.
Exactly.
That to me was amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah,
it
you
is.
Know. And
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, Yeah, we think that like, oh, we can't, you know, our body can't process it, or we need a complete protein, has to be perfectly packaged. And what I tell folks a lot of times is, let's just cut out the middleman. So we eat cows that are eating grass and leafy vegetables, we're eating all these things. Well, let's just go straight to that, because you can put on, yes, you can convert it into protein, a complete protein. You can have it be athletic performance. And why not do all of those things while at the same time optimizing your health, which is really my perspective as a physician, as a cardiologist, is really about trying to keep folks from having that first, second, and third, many times, heart attack is the goal.
For sure, for sure. You know, and, you know, I was really impressed, and it was so motivating to watch that movie. I felt inspired. Like, I want to be, you know, I want to do this. I got to jump on this. But the thing is that to be realistic, I mean, you really got to plan. You really got to plan and be knowledgeable about plant-based before you jump into it. So one thing that I did for me to be kind of a game changer in my family, in my life, is that I started implementing that Meatless Monday concept, you know, and influenced my husband and my daughter to do the same. And I got my mom doing this as well. She lives in Oregon. She's telling other people about it too. And, you know, I come from a family of farmers and hunters. So this was absolutely a task for me to do. But I got to say that, you know, I feel good by easing into it just, you know, on Mondays, because you really don't realize how much you eat animal products in your everyday life, you know, until you really dissect it and get down to it. So I actually have to really meal plan on Sunday to know, you know, that I'm eating plant-based on Monday, because I flipped. I ate something afterwards. I go, oh my gosh, that wasn't plant-based, you know, on a Monday. So can you explain that whole concept with Meatless Monday for our listeners?
Yeah, you know, that's a great concept, and it's a great way of just saying, okay, let me get my feet wet. Let me try it out and see that it's not as scary as I think. It's not as strange or foreign like I think. I can actually have foods that are good. And so there's a lot of different approaches for it. Some folks have described I'm vegan or plant-based until 5 p.m. Some folks have said, well, you know what, I'm going to start by just adding a simple salad to my meal before every meal. I'll start off with a salad. And I always tell folks in a joke, a little jest, I say, it's not ranch soup with a few pieces of lettuce. It's actually a robust mounds of greens and different colorful vegetables and so forth on your plate, starting that way, or going a Meatless Monday, which is like one day a week, you dedicate that I will have everything that's of a plant source, right? And it's no pressure or anything of that sort. So maybe what I tell people a lot of times is, let's just think about what you eat on average for a given day. And so you personally may say, well, I'll have a bagel and I'll have coffee for breakfast, or I'll have a smoothie for breakfast. So, okay, well, smoothie's easy. We'll just replace your dairy milk with non-dairy milk. We'll still throw in the fruits and vegetables with it. We'll get rid of the yogurt or use a plant-derived yogurt and go from there until your smoothie's out the way. We can do a breakfast burrito. We can do a breakfast sandwich. We can have cereal too as well. The next thing you say, okay, well, what about for lunch? I'll have like a bowl of something. Okay, well, great. We're going to go ahead and we'll use brown rice or white rice. Instead of you having your chicken or steak or beef with it, we're just going to go ahead and have tofu, or we're going to just forget about that. We're going to have beans with there at this point in time. And then we're going to add our veggies on top of it. Or they may say, I'll have just a sandwich. Okay, well, let's try a veggie burger. Or let's try a burrito that has all the fixings. You can even add a little guacamole. You're going to add the beans. You're going to add the rice, the lettuce, the tomatoes, pico de gallo, and have a burrito or have a burrito bowl in that particular moment. And so you're making a conscious decision that I'm going to just try this out, and I'll sample and see if I'm satisfied, if I still have my energy. And what I have heard, I have not heard this one time say anyway except for this, is that, man, I have more energy. Man, I have a little bit more clarity. I don't have that afternoon lull when I'm at work where I feel like, oh, I'm ready to go to bed, go to sleep. And it's like all of a sudden this food is truly acting as fuel for your body to energize you instead of slowing you down. And that's really one of the keys and the benefits. And so there's tons of extended benefits to your health, to the environment, and so forth, just by adopting Meatless Monday. So that's a great approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, slowly integrating things, you know, in moderation, just slowly integrating for me is better. I mean, some people just jump all in. But for me, the integration, because I like to just test different things out, especially when I'm consulting athletes and consulting people, I have to try out things before I recommend it to my clients. So I try to do different things to be able to mm-hmm. recommend things to my clients. I'm the guinea pig, in other words, before I have other people, you know, try things out, you know. And I understand that you, you know, eat plant-based as well. How long have you been eating plant-based?
I have been, well, I've been vegetarian probably since about the age of 8, but I would call myself a junk foodarian. I had like all the junk food, cereal, candy bars, Danishes and donuts, even inside med school, pizza, you name it, I was down for it. And probably within the past now about 12 years, I've been whole food mm-hmm. plant-based. Slightly different in terms of I don't do any dairy or cheese or meat. I don't do fish, and I refrain from any refined products. So that whole idea of melting your mouth, not your hands, I'll have potatoes mm-hmm. and little potato chips. I will have bread that makes me chew until my jaws get tired, as opposed to bread that melts in my mouth. And so I'll do things like that. I'll have things of that nature, more of the whole grains, fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds. I rarely do nuts, but seeds I'll have a bit more for the antioxidants and so forth. And so that's been about 12 years.
12 years. Wow. Wow. Yeah. And, you know, so what's the difference between, you know, plant-based versus vegan? What are the hard differences between the two, the distinctions?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. There's so many terms. It's confusing, you know, with all
it
the
is really.
styles and labels on everything. But essentially, plant-based and vegan are very similar. All plant-based means is that you're getting the majority of your food intake from plant-derived foods. And so some people will have meat with it. Some people may have yogurt, other things. It's taken on this connotation almost as an umbrella. Vegan means that I'm not having any animal-derived products. I'm not having any milk, dairy, eggs. I'm not having honey. I'm not having any of these things at all if I'm vegan. Now those two, so they can be very similar. The difference between mm-hmm. whole food plant-based is that now what I'm doing is I'm eliminating the refined, because here's the key. In my mind, the enemy is, we have a common enemy when it comes to health issues. And that common enemy is the standard American diet, right? Highly refined, processed, mm-hmm. rich in animal products too as well. And that also pertains to vegan foods and some plant-based foods. So the reason why I ascribe as a cardiologist to a whole food plant-based diet is because the whole foods in study after study have been shown to be beneficial of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, legumes, nuts, and seeds in their whole form, not in their refined form, but in their whole form, have predominantly and overwhelmingly been shown to be beneficial.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Thank you for breaking that down.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Do you actually get full, you know, from eating plants? Like, you know, do you ever have that full feeling, or do you feel that you're satisfied by, you know, or do you feel, you know, yeah, I mean, do you feel satisfied by just eating a plant-based diet?
I do. I mean, you think about it, right? How many potatoes can you eat? Right? I mean, how many like straight potatoes can you eat? I don't mean with sour cream and bacon on it, but even if you were to have like chili that just had like a nicely homemade chili with lentils and mushrooms and all these things, all savory and spices in it, and it had kicked it up a notch, you put that on your a big potato with broccoli, are you going to get full? Absolutely, you're going to get full.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
you
yeah.
can, and you're going to love it. You know, you can do pastas too as well, and marinaras. You can do versions of spaghettis, of lasagnas and Italian. Every single cuisine has at its heart a whole food plant-based. I mean, if we think about it, so my folks are from Louisiana, and they're from New Orleans, right? And so they mm-hmm. weren't wealthy. They weren't wealthy at all. And so they primarily survived off of red beans and rice, greens, other things like that. They had rare amounts of meat because they couldn't afford meat. Meat was a luxury. And it was a food historically of the wealthy, even going back to the time of the kings, which is why we even describe like gout and some other ailments as the a disease of the wealthy and of kings. And so at every basis, whether or not it's in different cultures of different ethnic groups, at the basis is a whole food plant base, whether or not it's corn, whether or not it's rice, if it's beans, those things, root foods, are all at the basis of most. And so you can become full. You can be. You can make it savory in the form of stews. You can make it in the form of soups. You can make it in the form of casseroles. And so I love it. I love it.
You know, I tried something today that was just kind of experimental. I did a cauliflower rice stir fry, and it was so good. I put a bunch of vegetables in it, and it was totally, I mean, it was just so delicious. And I kind of felt like, you know, it was a real stir fry, like with the chicken and the, you know what I mean? Like how I would not to say
yeah.
real, but you know, just the normal way that I would normally make it. And it tasted
yeah.
just as good without the meat, you know? So I think it's those little slow changes in integrating
yeah.
that are making it an easier transition for me, because I really do see the benefits, you know, when I eat plant-based and I go to my yoga class or I work out,
mm-hmm.
I can tell a difference, you know, what I put in my body and my performance, I can absolutely tell, you know, a major difference. But it is a game changer. It really is. You know, so what are your thoughts about blood type and plant-based diets?
Yeah, you know, I mean, what I always kind of start off when I talk about any diet is that any diet, once again, or eating pattern that takes you away for the most part from a standard American diet of like the chips and the cookies and all these things like that is going to see benefits. But when we really look at, so that's number one. Number two is that when I look at diets, the second thing I always ask is, what question are folks asking? And many times that question is solely about, well, can I lose weight? Can I fit into this pair of pants, or can I get ready for this event or whatever it is in terms of losing weight? If your question, though, is about I'm looking at sustained health outcomes, that I don't want to end up like relative X, Y, and Z, perhaps with a stroke or with diabetes or with heart disease or with heart failure or even with cancer, right, then that's a whole different ballpark. And so the issue with the blood type diets is that they have never been proven in any degree of studies to have a medical value in terms of showing outcomes. And so there's been reviews looking at them and then analysis to looking to go ahead and try and figure out if there's any correlation, and none have been found. The author, to what I understand, has like reported trying to do a couple of studies, but no results have ever been reported. And this is now 12, 15 years in waiting for it. So I'm unaware, and I recently looked probably about several months ago at the issue of blood type, and it was brought to my attention by a relative. And they're like, hey, what do you think of this blood type? And so I started looking into it a little bit, and I can't find anything to validate it. And it does not make sense to me completely, just when you say it out loud. It just doesn't make sense, because number one, 200 years ago, did people know their blood type as readily?
No.
No. Most people I interact with, you may know your blood type, but most people I interact with don't even know their blood type. Right?
No, they don't.
So it's an interesting concept of how this assignment has been made like this, and this is so it's only applicable for about the past 100 or 120 years. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me when you say it out loud and begin to rationalize, think through it rationally.
Yeah. Wow, that's a good point. I've never heard anybody say it quite like that about that. Yeah, that's a really good point. So I want to switch gears and talk about, you know, your profession. You know, my mom was a nurse for 35 years, and she's worked in hospitals, clinics, and nursing homes. But her favorite place that she mentioned she worked for was the clinic, and particularly with heart doctors, because she said that they always had the best, you know, bedside manner and their professionalism, and they're just good people. Like, they have a heart. Heart doctors that really have a heart, all doctors do. But just particularly,
yeah.
She really enjoyed 12 and a half years of working in the clinic, you know, with heart doctors who were coming and going. There were a lot of different heart doctors in the small town that I grew up in Oregon. And she just really said that they were top notch. So, you know, my hat goes off to you. You know, what made you want to become a cardiologist?
Wow, that's a great question. And number one, thank you to your mom. I will have to pay her for the kind words as
aww.
Well. I love what I do. I absolutely love what I do. And so, you know, growing up as a kid, my dad used to always say to me, I mean, he was a strong proponent of education. And so he gave three options. He was like, are you going to be a doctor, a lawyer, or a businessman? I don't know. Which one are you going to be? So I said, okay, I'm going to be a doctor. And a lot of folks say that. But I started kind of looking through. I had this natural interest in and I love science. I love the body. I love the health. I was very interested in it. And I remember, of course, as a kid growing up in Compton in L.A., I remember growing up thinking, I want to be a Lakers team doctor. I'm going to be a Lakers team doctor is what I want to be. And then I hit my first year of college, going to my second year, and I did a rotation in the summer, and I fell in love with cardiology. And when I graduated from college, I wrote, I wanted to be the chief of cardiology at UCLA is what I wrote in terms of my aspirations graduating from college with a biochemistry degree. And so I'm very
wow.
fortunate. I feel like when I look at my top tier dream jobs, cardiology is still there. I absolutely love what I do. And I mean, the only thing that would trump that would be if I were a professional athlete and did some other things like that. But this is still at the top. I love it.
Wow, that's really cool. Love, you know, seeing and hearing, you know, dreams come true. It's just so important to do what you love, because it shows in your work when you really show up for work and you're present and you love what you're doing. I mean, so what does a day in the life of a cardiologist, like, what do you do? What does your week look like? Just in a kind of, I know it's probably every day is kind of different, but what is it like? What do you do?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And so there's so many different types of cardiologists now. It's almost saying you have heart problems is almost like saying you have car problems. So you can have body and fender mm-hmm. cardiologists, which we call heart failure specialists. You can have electricians or issues of the heart, and those are called electrophysiologists. And then you can have plumbers like myself, which are interventional cardiologists. And then you have your general contractor cardiologists, which are your general docs who do general cardiologists who do a little bit of everything. And so my week, for the most part, I have administrative duties. That's a portion where I'm kind of overseeing the department and certain nuts and bolts and growing the program as best as I can. But the other part clinically is that I will perform procedures in the cath lab. So that's where we take patients into a procedure room. It looks like an operating room to a lot of people, but we're not surgeons. And we enter into their body and we look at the artery supplying their heart. And then if we find blockages, we then determine, do they need to go through open heart surgery? Do we need to go in and place a stent, or can we continue with medications and lifestyle? And so going through a sequence, we take care of patients who are in the throes of having a heart attack. We take care of patients who have damage to their structure of their heart, and a lot of times called valvular disease, or where their doors are stuck. Doors normally open and close fully, and so sometimes the doors are just stuck and they won't open, or they push all the way through when they're supposed to close. And so we call that a leakage or stenosis, meaning the door doesn't open quite well enough. And so we'll go in and we'll assess that. Now technology has advanced and we're able to actually fix or correct many of those issues directly out the cath lab without sending someone directly to open heart surgery. So it's very rewarding. We do imaging of the heart and are able to identify. We do a lot of counseling. We speak to folks inside of clinic. We have clinic too as well. And so I derive a huge amount of satisfaction. We put in pacemakers. I missed that. And defibrillators, that's from like the electrical standpoint. So there's a whole host of things. But my day is comprised into these procedure days. I have my clinic days when I'm in clinic and I see a few patients, and then I have my administrative time is generally how that works. And then I have my time when I'm on call, which is typically on the weekend, like this upcoming weekend, I'll be on call, which means anything that happens I'm responsible for from a cardiology standpoint or heart standpoint, I'll go and attend to that person if needed.
Wow, I had no idea of all the different types of cardiology that there was. I didn't know that it was, I mean, I didn't know that there were that many different types of cardiologists. That's pretty amazing to learn. So thank you for educating me and the listeners on that. And, you know, in what you do, how important do you believe, you know, one's diet actually plays in their health in regards to patients with cardiovascular challenges?
It is the most important aspect in terms of nutrition. I mean, we know that lifestyle, so we look at nutrition as a central cog of lifestyle, and lifestyle includes your activity. It includes, you know, habits in terms of smoking and some other things. But we know that cardiovascular disease can be prevented, 80% of it, 80% through our lifestyle.
Wow.
So it's huge. That's
unbelievable.
Why it's so important. I mean, so think about it, right? Let's say that you got a brand new car, right? You either bought one for yourself or a loved one bought you a brand new car. What's your favorite? What's your dream car?
A Lamborghini.
All right, I feel you. For me, it's an Aston Martin.
I'm old school with
it. So we'll go Lambo, right? Now, are you gonna put any kind of gas in that Lambo? You're not gonna put any kind of gas in that Lambo.
No.
If the Lambo says put premium unleaded, you're not putting diesel in there. You're not putting regular unleaded. You're putting premium. You're not even going to put premium from anywhere. You're going to put premium from a premium gas station, right?
And so, absolutely.
How do we treat our bodies? We'll throw anything at our bodies. We'll throw any food substance at our bodies, so much so that labels have to be put into packages saying not for human consumption, because we'll eat just about anything into our bodies, and we'll eat crap. There's one algorithm by this guy named Jeff Novick, who's a dietitian, I believe, and he says calorie rich and processed foods, crap. We'll put any of this stuff into our body and expect it to perform. But we know good and well if we put anything in a car, none of us are going to be surprised when it breaks down. You see what I mean? That's the difference, and that's why this thing of nutrition is so vitally important. And so I remember when I kind of came to this aha moment as it relates to, because I wasn't taught nutrition inside med school or in college or in residency for internal medicine or residency for cardiology or fellowship for interventional cardiology. This was all self-derived because I had so many patients asking me. And when I kind of went through a personal tragedy of my dad suffering with diabetes and passing away from ill effects of that, and my wife's dad passing away from ill effects of high blood pressure leading to kidney failure, I really kind of had to go back to the basics and begin to kind of question what we're doing. After I would have folks say to me all the time, oh, thank you for saving my life. But then they were back within just a few months in some cases. Back within a few years and saying, you did such a great job. Really? Well, why are you back? Something has to change. There's something that has to be a little different in this process. And so that's when I start really researching. And I didn't start off with, like, even though I was vegetarian, I didn't start with vegetarian stuff. I started reading everything. But the bulk of the data consistently all pointed in one direction, that the reversal, the change, the benefit to the body is through a whole food plant-based diet. And so I remember starting to just go in and talk to a patient. And it was like if it was set up and it was destiny, because the first three patients I told this to that went ahead, and I was sheepish. I mean, I'm an interventional cardiologist. So we are like, in my mind, we like to think of ourselves as the all-stars of whatever of cardiology. And so we, you know, you do procedures. That's what you do. You save lives inside acute heart attacks. And so to talk about food was almost like I'm setting myself up and being ostracized and so forth. And so, but I felt so impassioned that I had to. And this was before the time where it became so well known and well versed and everyone's talking about it. And the first three patients had phenomenal outcomes. That it matched the research I had read, and their symptoms went away without me even adding medication. I actually had to take medications away, that their diabetes seemed to improve and their functionality, and I knew that this was something that I had to do. And so when I'm asked the question of what's the most important part, or what role does nutrition play and food play in heart disease and cardiac disease, it's everything. It's everything. You know, our medications are powerful. It's blessings. We've made a lot of progress scientifically in procedures, but those are to be adjunctive. Those are to be the alternative if a person fails everything, because there's going to still be people who may not do well despite doing everything right. We all know those people, right? And so that's where the value of having procedures and pills, right? There's no shame if you need it. That's the whole purpose. But it's not ideal if we eliminate what should be the standard treatment. The standard treatment should be, okay, you know what? We're going to optimize your nutrition first. We're going to get you moving first. We're going to get you sleeping first. We're going to get you learning how to love first. You know, the acronym a colleague of mine uses called the SELF principle. And I love it. So I'm trying to steal it from them as much as I can. And it's like, you got to be selfish. You got to get your sleep. You need to get your exercise. You have to love instead of hate. And you need to adopt food, real food, whole food. So food is extremely important, but it definitely is augmented by those other components of sleep, exercise, and love as well.
For sure. And I think it's all about how you view food. You know, do you view food as energy, or do you view it as just something that you enjoy? I mean, you can do both, but really viewing it as the fuel, that's kind of the line that I use all the time. It's funny you said that about, you know, what type of gasoline do you put into your tank? You know, I use that all the time. And actually, my neighbor owns a Chevron on the corner, and so he always hooks me up with that little discount on gas. Thank you, neighbor. and I always put the premium inside my tank. Yeah, and he broke it down to me one day, actually, about gasoline and why it's so important. I won't say the brands out there of gasoline, but, you know, there's some cheap stuff out there, and we all know those, and then there's some premium gases out there. And he was telling me how important it was. And then I was like, wow, I could relate that into nutrition. So I use that analogy quite a bit. It's so funny to hear you say that because, you know, and kudos, you know, for being a doctor that actually studies nutrition and advocates for that, because I've been in conferences with doctors on panels, and they say, look, I'm not educated in, you know, nutrition. You'd have to pay me extra I need to go to extra classes for that. That's why we have a registered dietitian. So I love the fact that you know, took it upon yourself, you know, as a cardiologist, as a doctor, you know, going out there and getting educated in nutrition and helping your patients out with that. That just, I'm so happy to hear that coming from a doctor. That's just really enlightening. You know, and speaking of, you know, studying nutrition on the side, let's talk about some of your projects that you do in your spare time. I say that laughing because you sound like a pretty busy person. But, you know, I understand that you have a lot of – go ahead.
No, I was going to say, my spare time. Yesterday, my spare time was helping my son with his – because everyone's at home, stay at home, right? And so helping him with geometry. So I had to refresh my project last night was refreshing my memory over geometry and going through angles and everything else so I can help teach him on that. That was my special project last night,
Oh, yeah, now you're a teacher too. We all have to be teachers at this point in time. We'll get into that in a minute. You know, so I want to I want to get into the Slave Food Project. Can you tell me what that is all about? I read that in your bio you have this amazing project called the Slave Food Project. I'm really excited to hear about that.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing it up. And, you know, I mean, one of my passions has been educating the community. And so what I found, and sadly to say, it didn't resonate with me inside med school or training afterwards, but there is so substantial health disparities inside this nation, like considerable health disparities, and it centralizes inside of African-American and Hispanic and financially distraught individuals in these communities that are predominantly in urban communities. And so one of my main passions and focus has been in educating these communities about a different way, because when you go into these communities, and I grew up in one of these communities, right, is that you see them littered street by street with fast food, quick serve outlets, fast food, liquor stores, small amounts of grocery stores are sparse with foods that are not there, what we call food deserts and food swamps. Food deserts means the absence of plentiful fresh fruits and vegetables, and food swamps is the overabundance of these highly refined processed foods. And so we have folks who are growing up in this environment, and they're getting this sort of brand recognition with these different industries. And it's driving them in all these things. And study after study is showing us that the closer you live in proximity to these establishments, the higher the likelihood of stroke and diabetes, obesity, and so forth, and heart disease that are there. And so that's been one of my projects. That's been one of my passions as far as educating around the country and out the country, too, as well, about the benefits of really transitioning towards eating more fruits and vegetables, getting back to the basics. And so one of the things, like you asked me about a bit about Game Changers and about the movie itself, and I believe that all these movies are of value because they're almost like superhero movies. I mean, we know a superhero movie is always solely about a good guy and a bad guy, a superhero and a villain. There may be a love interest. Typically, the good guy wins in the end, unless there's a sequel in which he'll win in the sequel, right, later on. And so these movies about plant-based foods, yes, we know that food is the central key. It's the component that will result in good. But the way in which we frame the story, whether it's Superman, Batman, Aquaman, or whomever, different according and will appeal to different audiences. That was such the value of Game Changers. And so part of the concept that I developed with a friend of mine out of my nonprofit, where I do a lot of the lecturing, Healthy Heart Nation, is about developing this idea of slave food and really going in into the communities of these underrepresented in African, starting in the African American community, and walking through more of a historical perspective, but looking at how we got to this point. Why is it that people die sicker and sicker in this country? And starting and being very specific to different ethnic groups, and starting with the African American culture, and seeing how did we get to this point. It's not just about the obvious slave food, but looking at, I don't have a choice if I grow up inside this environment and I have to take public transportation, and I can't go and carry a bunch of bags on the bus or on there, and I have no access. I remember growing up with my dad, we would drive as a kid. I would ride with him, and we would have to drive like 20 miles. I didn't know why. I just liked going with him in the car to a grocery store. I love going to grocery store to this day. You go in, the lights were so bright, and you see the fruit just rising up there. It was all pretty, and we'd go in these stores, and it was late at night, and we would buy up different things there and come back, but we would never shop in our area where we live, close by the house. But everyone doesn't have that luxury of doing that. And so that's really the passion, is kind of, so there's no choice. You're almost enslaved. And how many of us have said we're going to eat healthy, and then all of a sudden we're grabbing that candy bar, we're grabbing that chips, the soda, at the end of the day when our willpower goes away, or when we're in this long line and they put the candy right there tempting us. They put the chips right there, the soda right there, and at the last minute you grab it. You're enslaved to it. You said you wanted to stop, but somehow something drew you right in. Well, it's by design, because the food industry, that studies are showing, it's not me who's saying this, this is studies that are showing the fact that the combination, this bliss point, great book called Salt, Sugar, and Fat by Michael Moss, a New York Times best-selling author, right, speaks to really about going behind the veil, and looking at how food is really manufactured, and it's aimed at women, at minority groups, to kind of keep you going back for more and more, this bliss point. So that's really what the Slave Food Project is. It's really kind of talking about bringing awareness and a different light to this issue of food, and from a historical standpoint, applying it to experiences that many segments of the population are experiencing, but letting them know that you can have hope, that there's individuals who are transforming and they're growing gardens right there on the street sidewalk, that they're setting up these co-op grocery stores like they have in Atlanta, that they're setting up vegan restaurants like Chef Babette down in Inglewood, trying to say, hey, you know what, we can do it, we can make it flavorful and make it great for you in this particular line. And so that's really what my passion is to develop really a docuseries that will really go into depth and educate the population, is one of the things that we're looking to do through our nonprofit.
I really, really love that and admire that. That is something I'm so passionate about that I could probably talk to you about for days, because I've turned four inner city schools into learning centers, healthy learning centers that people from all over the state of California, we were stakeholders that were flown in and out of Sacramento, transforming schools that were told it's impossible to making it possible, like Carver Middle School. We built gardens there. I made policy changes where people couldn't be there with the little Takis and the nacho sauce and the little stands, you know, that people come by at the Hot Cheetos. I made it a policy, like it's illegal for you to do that. I get goosebumps when I talk about it, because it's really real. A lot of people that don't have cars in inner city, predominantly urban areas that have been designed, that there's no fresh produce and nice stores that have, you know, good produce in there. There's like little corner stores with nasty produce in it. Nobody's going to want to buy that when you got Hot Cheetos right there and chocolate and Snickers bars. I mean, it's just, it's tough, but you know, it just starts with education, and a lot of people just don't know. They're just not educated. It's not something that you're taught in school. So I really admire you for that project and for Healthy Heart Nation. You know, speaking of nonprofit, you know, I've been in that world for 13 years, and currently I'm, you know, still, I'm serving seniors right now on an exponential basis. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous how much this COVID-19 pandemic has just changed our world. And, you know, I care for seniors. I feed seniors every day, and our numbers are literally growing, tripling week by week. Yeah. They're doubling and tripling. And it's certainly made a huge impact on my job and my life and my staff. And we're just trying to make sure that we feed these seniors. We turned 19 senior centers into to-go sites, and then now they're all homebound. Now we're delivering straight to these people's houses. People that usually come in the hundreds to our centers are now being delivered to. So it's a lot. You know, how has, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic made an impact in your department of cardiology?
Wow. Well, first I'll say bravo to you, because that's huge, delivering food to the seniors who need to stay in and practice social distancing because they're at the greatest risk. The other avenue is the fact that our financially disparate individuals who use WIC and food stamps who aren't able to have delivery made to them. I recently signed and participated in a petition in order to kind of solicit the government to go ahead and change the policy and allow these folks to order, use some of their subsidies in order to have food delivered to them from the grocery. So bravo to you. That's extremely important. And so what we're seeing for the healthcare in general is that we're bracing for the wave. You know, we've seen the wave hit New York. We're seeing what's happening in terms of it just exhausting capacity is what we're speaking about. It's exhausting the capacity of the healthcare and for the healthcare providers and our equipment. And so we're bracing for that, where all of us are going to have to go and being prepared, like if we're out in wartime fields, where, hey, I'm a cardiologist, but if things hit like a disaster style, that we're prepared to go in and take care of our members and the patients who are coming through our doors, period. And so it doesn't, at that point, I'm not just an interventional cardiologist, I am a medical doctor. And so at that point, my goal and my edict is to kind of care for people and whatever their needs are. If that means starting an IV, if that means kind of prescribing antibiotics for them and tending and helping assisting our critical care specialists and managing ventilators and so forth, then that's what we'll all do. So right now we've had a rapid progressive incremental plans are being put in place to address this issue. In the meanwhile, what we're doing too, as well, is we're also making sure we're appropriately staffed. And I don't want to speak in terms of the organization, but in general, I think the field of cardiology has had to make changes in the way in which we deliver medicine. So we've had to shift to, hey, just go come into the office, to now doing telemedicine. So, hey, I'll give you a call. Let's do a video visit. Let me check on you. And guess what? I'm actually having to spend time talking to you. And by talking to you, I can actually learn what the problem is and manage you perhaps without tests. So all of a sudden, we're finding that maybe we don't need all of these tests that we order routinely and when we substitute communication. And so there's a lot of value in terms of what I think the learnings are going to come out of this disaster with the use of this telemedicine across the board and the diminishment, mm-hmm. even within, as from physicians, of just ordering test after test that may be less needed. And so I'm spending time counseling and educating. So, you know, I think for patients in general, I've expressed to them, acknowledge the concerns that we have during every flu season, and this is one of the worst because of this new COVID-19 virus, but social distancing, hand washing on a repeated basis becomes important. And getting back to my one-trick pony self, as my wife likes to call me, I always go back to the same basics, which is nutrition, sleep, exercise, love, which means I'm having gratitude, which means I'm being empathetic to as well, so I'm not hoarding, right? I'm doing like what you're doing. I'm giving of myself to serve others, and I'm going to deliver food, or I'm going to allow someone to have toilet paper or things of that nature, because by doing that, we know we can bolster our immune system. That's the key. So that's what I'm experiencing right now. I'm not sure what I'm going to encounter. It's day by day. It's week by week. I think until we can kind of get through the projected time in which we're going to see the onslaught.
Wow. Well, my hat really goes off to you again, just for, you know, taking the time to be on my show, and with your busy schedule and all the projects that you're involved in, and also during this pandemic. I mean, it's a different world that we live in, and, you know, we're running out of time, but I just want to seriously say thank you so much for being on that front line and certainly saving lives and educating people on how to live a better and more healthier life. It just is really enlightening to hear a doctor care so much about nutrition. I just really appreciate you being on the show tonight. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. And thanks for everything you're doing as well. That's huge. It really is.
I really appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon, Dr. Bertice. Thank you so much, and you stay healthy and safe, you and your family.
Same to you. Thanks again.
Thank you. So, everybody, wow, what an interesting doctor. He is just, I can't say enough good things about him. I wish that I had more time to talk to him, have so much more to ask him, and I know you all probably do too. But due to time constraints, I want to end with this message because I think it's kind of really important. There's a poem called What If by Gurpreet K. Gill. There's so much fear, and perhaps rightfully so, about COVID-19. And what if we subscribe to the philosophy that life is always working out for us, that there's an intelligence far greater than humans at work, that it all is interconnected? What if the virus is here to help us, to reset, to remember what is truly important, reconnecting with family and community, reducing travel so that the environment, the skies, the air, our lungs, all get a break? Parts of China are seeing blue sky and clouds for the first time in forever, with the factories being shut down, working from home rather than commuting to work, less pollution, more personal time, reconnecting with family as there is more time at home, an invitation to turn inwards, a deep meditation rather than the usual extroverted going out to self-soothe, to reconnect with self, what is really important to me, a reset economically, the working poor, the lack of healthcare access for over 30 million in the U.S., the need for paid sick leave, how hard was one's work to be able to live, to have a life outside of work, to reconnect with our elders who are susceptible to the virus and washing their hands. How did that become a new thing that we needed to remember? But yes, we did. The presence of grace for all. There is a shift underway in our society. What if it is one that is favorable for us? What if the virus is an ally to our evolution and our remembrance of what it means to be connected, humane, living a simpler life to be less impactful, more kind to our environment? An offering from my heart this morning, offered as another perspective, another way of relating to this virus, this unfolding, this evolution. It was time for a change. We all knew that. And change has arrived. What if? Thank you all so much for listening tonight. I really appreciate your support and your time. Look out for another show. In 2 weeks, I'll be interviewing Antonio McKee's son, AJ McKee, UFC fighter. And I look forward to talking with you soon. Again, everybody out there, stay safe, stay healthy, and take care. Good night.